Welcome to Supernatural Podcast, episode 24 for Bloodlust, which originally aired in the U.S. on October 12, 2006. Let's move into our newsroom, and JD has some news for us.
Welcome to the Supernatural News Brief for October 11th. There's lots of news, so pay attention, because here it is, real fast. Jensen and Jared spent last weekend chasing a bit of tail at the Palms Casino in Las Vegas. They were there for the opening of the new Playboy Club, retro style, complete with bunny-suited waitresses and bathroom walls that are covered with centerfolds and mirrors centerfolds on the bathroom stalls. Which makes me think about how awkward it could be if one of those pictures was of Joanna Krupa. Hey, Jensen, buddy, is this your ex-girlfriend I'm peeing on? Angel's barking up the wrong Winchester, according to the email sent to the TV Guide podcast. Angel's love of Jared is obvious, but emails say it's Jensen who's the bomb. The panel says the ratings are fine, so don't worry about the killer time slot killing the show. Also at TV Guide, Ask Osiello has this to say. Executive producer Eric Kripke confirmed to TV Guide's Angel Cohen that we'll find out what Papa Winchester's final words to Dean were around mid-season. Hint, it pertains to Sam and the other kids like him. Big surprise there. What do you get when you cross the Jersey Devil with a pair of leotards? You get Jared on the Preston and Steve radio show on WMMR in Philadelphia. You can listen to the podcast by visiting podcastalley.com. Search for Preston and Steve and look for the October 5th show. Jared, leotards, some old guy with 50 bucks? Listen in, it's a real hoot. And speaking of an offer Jared can't refuse, it was just announced that he will be the guest of honor at Fangoria's Weekend of Horrors convention in Chicago, February 23rd to the 25th. Only Jared again, and not Jensen. Which begs the question, is Jensen afraid of his fans? Or maybe the question should be, why isn't Jared afraid of his? Get all the details at Fangoria.com. On a more serious note, you may have noticed the In Memoriam title card at the end of Everybody Loves Clown. Peter Ellis was the director of The Benders and Bloody Mary, along with dozens of other episodes of popular TV shows. Ellis died in April of this year, and according to Variety, donations may be made in his name to gettingoutbygoingin.org. Tomorrow night's episode is Bloodlust, and coming up next week on Supernatural, Children Shouldn't Play with Dead Things, also known as Afterlife. Dean and Sam investigate the murder of a college student who has come back from the dead, seeking revenge on those who mistreated her while she was alive. Upon confrontation, the ghost savagely attacks Sam, leaving him injured. While in town, the brothers visit their mother's grave to pass along something from their father. The write-up from the CW mentions guest star Summer Glau of Firefly, but this has yet to be confirmed. And that's it from the ooky spooky world of Supernatural. I'll see you next week.
And on to the recap. It opens in Red Lodge, Montana. A girl is running through the woods, apparently being chased by something. Suddenly she turns around and there's someone standing behind her holding a long curved knife, and she is decapitated. So it cuts to Dean and Sam driving along the road in the Impala. Sam says that Dean's in a good mood. And Dean asks, why shouldn't I be? I got my car, got a case, things are looking up.
You hear a couple of severed heads and a pile of dead cows and you're Mr. Sunshine.
So they go see the sheriff. They ask about the cattle mutilations and the severed head and suggest that it sounds ritualistic, like satanic cult ritual stuff, Dean suggests. The sheriff looks at him, laughs, and then realizes they're serious and tells them that the cattle aren't being mutilated. So it cuts to Dean and Sam at a morgue, dressed in white lab coats. They examine the head but don't find any satanic markings. So Dean suggests that they look in her mouth to see if the murderer stuffed anything down the throat. Now, I think Dean has been watching CSI. What they find is bizarre. Dean says, a retractable set of vampire fangs. You've got to be kidding me. So Sam and Dean go to a bar and head up to the counter. Sam tells the bartender that they're looking for someone, and the bartender tells them that these people have moved here about 6 months ago and would sleep all day, party all night. A shady man looks on. Dean and Sam corner the shady man behind the bar and ask to see his teeth. The guy replies he's not a vampire. He says he heard them talking inside and he knows how to kill vampires. When they don't move back, he shows them his teeth, and then they let him go. So Sam asks this man named Gordon if the two vampires that they killed were his, and he says yes. Dean asks him where the nest is, and he tells him to go hunt something else. So a man is in a mill, and suddenly he hears something. He gets up and walks outside. Suddenly Gordon is behind him, and they start to fight. The man's teeth come out. He's a vampire. Gordon is soon overpowered. Suddenly Gordon is pulled out from under a saw by Sam, and Dean starts to attack the vampire. He stabs it in the chest and brings the saw down on its neck, killing it. So it cuts to Sam, Dean, and Gordon in a bar celebrating the hunt. Sam really isn't into it and says he's going back to the motel. Dean tells Gordon the story of one of his first hunts.
So, I pick up this crossbow, and I hit that ugly sucker with a silver-tipped arrow right in his heart. Sam's waiting in the car, and me and my dad take the thing into the woods, burn it to a crisp. I'm sitting there, and I'm looking into the fire. I'm thinking to myself, I'm 16 years old. With kids my age, worried about pimples, prom dates. I'm seeing things that they'll never even know, never even dream of. So right then, I just sort of
embraced the life.
Yeah.
Back at yet another winter motel, Sam calls Ellen, asking her if she knows a man named Gordon Walker. She says he does. He's a good hunter, but is dangerous to everyone and everything around him. Sam is suddenly attacked from behind and wakes up with a bag over his head, tied up and gagged, in the vampire nest. Sam is about to be hurt but stopped by a female vampire named Lenore. She says, "I'm not going to hurt you, I just want to talk to you." She tells him that they're not like other vampires, they don't kill humans, and they don't drink their blood. Lenore tells him that they found other ways to eat, like cattle blood. And she says that if there's no death and no missing locals, then there's no reason for people like Sam to come looking for them. Sam asks her why he should believe her, and she says, fine, she's going to let him go. So Sam goes back to the motel where Dean and Gordon are hanging out and asks to talk to Dean alone. Sam tells Dean that they have to rethink the hunt.
If it's supernatural, we kill it. End of story. That's our job.
No, Dean, that is not our job. Our job is hunting evil. And if these things aren't killing people, they're not evil.
So it cuts to Lenore packing her truck. Gordon stabs her in the chest with a knife soaked in dead man's blood. When Sam and Dean arrive, Gordon has tied Lenore up and he's cutting her with a knife, which is dipped in dead man's blood. Dean says that if he wants the vampires, he has to go through him. They start to fist fight. Gordon grabs his knife again and comes at Dean, but Dean gets the upper hand and ties up Gordon. So the next morning, Sam returns and tells Dean that all the vampires have left. Let's move into our discussion and analysis of this episode. This is the first time we're all together, so why don't we go around and just say a little bit about ourselves? I'll start. I'm Ellen. I have been doing a Supernatural podcast since April, a weekly podcast talking about news, episode recaps, and then I spend a lot of time looking at the myths and legends and the truth behind the episodes. So it's been a fun thing, but I thought it would be more interesting to do a panel discussion, so that's why I'm here.
Next. Oh, you're not going to point a finger? I'll go next.
You can go next.
Oh, most of you guys know me online as JD Sampson, and I am a rather infamous fan fiction writer. And if you don't know what that means, you're going to have to find out for yourself. And I'm also rather infamously known for the fact that I sometimes have insider information, because I do, on occasion, work with studios and on movies and TV shows, including one special film that, I'm not allowed to talk about anymore. But needless to say, you're all waiting to see it when it comes out. And that's me. And I'm glad to join you, because I really wanted to do a podcast. And I'm glad Ellen and her buddy George are handling all the tech end.
So who's next?
Well, I'm Melody. The reason I'm actually joining this podcast was I love the show. And just doing something like this, I have never actually talked with people I don't know. And this is like a new experience for me. And I just, for once, like discussing a show that I enjoy with other people other than my cousin or family member.
People who look at you oddly when you get and squee about it.
Yeah.
We hear you, sister.
Yep.
I think we have another person.
One more person here.
Yeah. Kim, I'm sorry. I wasn't sure if Melody was done yet.
Oh, sorry.
Jump in.
I'm Kim, and my son Chris is going to be on here with me, but he's having a little technical difficulty with his computer, so might just be me tonight. And we are both very big Supernatural fans. We've been watching it since the very beginning. And we had wanted to do some type of podcast, and then this opportunity came up, so we decided to go for it.
Cool. And a mother-son team.
Yes.
Wow, that's cool. My son refuses to watch. He's one of those, well, because I like it, he's not, no way he's
really
anywhere near the television.
Because it's so addicting, I can't see how you can keep anybody away from it.
That's how I feel about it, but yeah. not going to work. All right, so that's us. We're a motley crew, aren't we? Not pointing fingers at anyone particular's age, but
I was going to say, we're not going to be just telling those, are we?
No.
Okay, good.
Well, the fact that two of us mentioned having children old enough to have their own computers and do this themselves kind of hints at that, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
I'm sort of in the Jeffrey Dean Morgan realm. I'm not quite old enough to be their mother, but I can play one on TV.
Yeah.
And have played one on TV.
All right, then. Well, let's jump into the episode and talk about it. How about that beginning?
I was going to say, we have to start by going, bop, ba-da-da,
oh,
cool or what? And beautifully, just like, it was like art. It was just like a beautiful work of art. Anyway, they found that nice empty road.
Yep.
Basically, I wanted to
get up at 5 a.m.
I just wanted to jump in joy when I saw that.
And did the car not look particularly shiny too? The rims on the wheels were all like pristine, and
the light was shining off.
I know, beautifully reflective. And then, of course, we have Dean, who was doing everything short of making love to
his car.
I love that line about getting a room.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
That was priceless.
Call the car baby. But, you know, again, it's one of those things that, you know, I don't know if Kripke just instinctively knows what the fans want to see, or literally if he sees it on the line and goes, yeah, that's a great idea. We have to show Dean's great affection. For the car.
He said that over the summer hiatus, that was his number one question that he got was, is the Impala okay?
I know, are we a scary bunch or what? It is.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the Dukes of Hazzard in their car. I mean, the Impala definitely unintentionally became this really great third character.
Yep.
And yeah, look how upset everybody was when it was gone and how glorious when it came back.
We were all just waiting at the beginning. When is the car going to be fine?
I like that they use that music again. I mean, it you know, obviously it's the piece they've played before, mm-hmm. and they try not to repeat music, but it was so appropriate.
Yeah,
I think I recall that was the first episode that song came out.
Yeah,
also.
Yeah, it was in the pilot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if they had a song that was their theme song, that would pretty much be it, you know.
Yeah.
And it works so beautifully with that car coming up with the horizon. You should say this episode was directed by Robert Singer, who is one of the producers, right, of the show as well. I think he's one of the executive producers. Because there was some really beautiful, again, very artistic shots, especially at the end, the beginning and the end of the show had some really major, really nice things happening. So just the shout out to Singer, and written by Sarah Gamble, I think.
Yeah.
I believe.
Yeah.
And while we were discussing Happy Dean, I'll jump right in with one of my grumbles from the boards this week. I saw a lot of people on the boards complaining about the fact that Dean was so happy, and they felt that it was a little odd because of, you know, the father hadn't died. We don't really know how much time transpired, but I mean, I'm guessing it was a couple of weeks, don't you think, between the episodes implied?
It was.
Yeah, that car needed a lot of work.
I was going to say, it would have had to be. He did beat the death in the last show. So.
Yeah.
Well, and Ellen on the phone, too, made it sound like, you know, she hadn't heard from them in a little while, that it wasn't just like, I saw you 2 days ago kind of a thing. It was really like, wow, it's good to hear from you, as in it's been at least a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
So, but even still, I think what they're trying to get with with Dean that I think some people didn't catch on to is really another one of these stages of grief, which is, you know, really a manic depressive sort of response whereby everything, all the emotions are just so overboard. So happy isn't just happy. Happy is I'm ecstatic, gonna pound on my little car and sing little songs and carry on. And it's not that he's not grieving any longer. It's he's just...
He's kind of in a state of denial. Like, that's what I seem to see in the show. He was denying that his father was actually gone. Because during the conversation with Gordon, he had said that he thought his dad was would never die. Mm-hmm. And he was kind of denying that he was actually gone in the way.
Yeah, and I think we've seen in the past that putting that smile on his face, and the joke has always been Dean's way of hiding the pain, and Sam certainly calls him on that. But I think even more so, it was easy for him in that car, again, with Sam on the open road, it was easy to just think it's all the same way it was before Dad died. This is how it was when we were looking for him. He could almost imagine that everything was okay again. In his mind, that's normal. I mean, it's not for Sam, but in Dean's mind, that's normal.
Yeah.
We're in the car. We're on a hunt.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
You know, I got my wheels and I got my rock and roll and I'm great. And then it all falls apart. Poor baby.
Yeah.
Don't you think part of it is his way of helping Sam? Like, if he acts like he's feeling better, then it's, you know, his way of being protective of Sam?
I think he thinks he's helping Sam.
Right.
I don't think that he really is.
No, of course not.
Sam certainly would be much help. But yeah, because again, he says that line to Gordon about I have to keep the game face on for him. And that's typical too, you know, the caregiver, which Dean has always been. You think about it, he's the mother role, really. He's always taken care of. The caregiver in grief situations is the one who falls apart in the end because they're the one that hides it and feels they have to be strong for everybody. And, you know, they're the one who stops eating, stops doing anything for themselves and sleeping because they're so concerned with taking care of
everyone else. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think certainly that's part of what's happening here as well. So. He's such a good big brother. Poor Dean has had so much stuff heaped on him, you know?
Yeah.
What'd you guys think when he told Gordon about his first, like, time he actually accepted him being a hunter when he was 16? Like, his acceptance in actually fighting evil, his first actual kill.
Well, I think, you know, it's an interesting story because we haven't had a lot of backstory. We've had little bits here and there of their childhood and how they grew up. And, you know, I think that it's interesting to see, because certainly Dean was hunting, I think, younger than that, even.
Yeah. But
maybe he never got that close to the kill.
Yeah.
And there was something touching to me in the fact that he mentions that Sammy was in the car. Doesn't he? Is that my recollection?
Yeah.
Sam was in the car while they were doing this?
Yeah, he was in the car.
And I was dating back, so Sam would have been, what, 12?
Yeah.
Which is, you know, old enough to certainly know what's going on, not a baby.
Mm-hmm.
And there was something about that. Something about the fact that Sam was still sheltered but so close while they were doing this thing that they had to do. Yeah. It's kind of creepy, but.
Yeah. It would have been actually interesting if they have, like, flashbacks in some of the episodes. That would be real interesting of when they were younger.
And I'm surprised said they weren't going to do any more of those for a while.
Yeah.
Which is a shame. I liked them. I don't think everybody did, but I liked them when they did them.
Yeah, I think they need to be placed kind of like they were in Something Wicked where it ties to something else and it's really part of the story, not just like a little bit here and there.
Yeah. But this was a good way too, having Dean talk about their life in the past. I think what it does too is it gives us this, you know, it just helps us get to know these people.
More
better.
Background.
Yeah, I mean, anything more you know about how they got where they are. But it was interesting, and I, since we moved there, why don't we talk about it? So Gordon comes along, who's this, you know, hunter of vampires. How did you guys feel it was weird that Gordon was also one of those, hey, I've heard of you guys, and you guys are legendary, and but they've never heard of him? I don't know, it seems like they're doing that a lot this season all of a sudden, and I don't know.
Yeah,
I found that interesting because, like you said, they were talking about, you know, if Dean has started when he was 16 and they hunted with their father, but yet they don't know any of these people that the father came in contact with.
Yeah, and I know some people online had talked about that, use that as a character point, that John actually had protected them from the more vicious hunters like them, because they knew Pastor Jim and they knew Caleb and Bobby. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But obviously there's these other people that he didn't introduce them to. But I thought it was a little odd that I thought it was strange for Gordon to say, "Hey, I've heard of you guys." Because are they really, are our boys really legendary and they don't know it? Are they legends in their own minds?
Well, either that or it's a way of just sort of advancing the story without going through the whole, have you heard of my dad? Do you know him? He did this and that and the other. And it just bypasses all of that. And the other characters then already know all the history.
Right, which is what I think the point was, but I thought that was kind of cheating.
Yeah.
a little. But I know, you got to cram a lot of stuff.
There's only an hour. Yeah. Or, well, 40 minutes.
Yeah,
40.
But wait, we have to back up and talk about costumes and the coroner scene.
Oh!
And get me along because I want to show up. Yeah. You know, how nice to see the banter back.
Yeah.
You know, that humor that came, that was so indicative of the earlier episodes. Yeah.
Yeah.
And how yucky was that hair?
Really yucky.
Well, I did like the retractable teeth, though. That was awesome.
That was interesting.
Because I kept thinking they had to make that as a practical prop, I think, to make that when he pushed in that spot, the tooth would come out. Because I don't see how, I don't think they could have done that digitally. And so that was pretty cool. I bet you, can take a moment and imagine the day that Jensen and Jared got handed that prop. You know, was it a football at lunch? Was it, Jared, look, making the mouth up and down. it's your sister. Yeah. I just imagine they had a really good time with that prop. Yeah. Oh, boy.
Well, that and...
But it's very funny.
That and when Dean kills the vampire and the blood splashes on his face. If you've seen Burton's Sleepy Hollow, it's the same exact thing.
Yeah.
Johnny Depp had this fear of blood, and Burton kept splashing the blood up on him. And I just imagined that Jensen had the same response in that scene.
I had the other thing in that, we are jumping all over the place, but since you mentioned that scene, the thing that got me more than, I mean, the whole scene got me, but the fact that he made it not even easy to pull the blade down, that you could actually see him sort of like putting some muscle behind pulling this blade down to cut this guy's head off. And I'm sort of like, oh man. And then looking over at puppy dog Sammy, oh my God, he looked afraid of his brother for that
they
moment.
Looked shocked.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
He was like, almost like, where did that come from? You know,
that was shocking in a way, because that's the closest thing they have actually killed that looked like a human. So it's
very
true.
Very good point.
Yeah.
And I also didn't notice the first time through that I noticed the second. I didn't realize that not only does he stake the vampire, but then he starts punching this guy.
Yeah.
You know, fist to face, and then cuts the head off. And then again, it's that calm afterward. It's that he goes blank again, like we saw at the funeral pyre. It's just the, you know, standing there going, what?
Yeah.
Did I do something?
So at the end of that scene, I went back and again wondered what his father had told him when he bent over Dean and whispered something in his ear. Has anybody else thought about what he was told? Oh, I don't know what he was told. So, but
you know what he was told.
But you can only guess at it. But
he was told your brother's going to be a big, scary demon, and you may have to kill him one day.
Kill him. It's true. So you know.
Did we lose one of our?
We did.
Babies?
Let me.
Oh, it looks like we did.
Go get her back.
Go get her.
Get her.
Seriously, what does she think she's doing?
During this, I'll ask a question. Other than one other person last season, they haven't really talked about who the others might be, have they?
Well, no, we saw two of them last season. We saw Max.
Did we?
And the baby and Rosie. Yeah. The baby.
Oh, the baby. Okay, the baby.
Wait.
That's right.
She's
that's
trying
right.
to. Are we going to cut all this out? Are you going to edit this since we're not doing.
I forgot about the baby.
Yeah, little Rosie. And then we're going to see. We are going to
see. I'm sure there's more.
At least
yeah.
Two more coming up in two episodes shortly. They're going to start literally coming out of the woodwork. What's really funny is I have this picture on my on my desktop while we're working. It's one of the found behind the scenes shots, and Jared's sitting in his director's chair and he's talking on his phone and he's looking very intently down at his phone. And I have this like weird night gallery image of him suddenly turning his head toward me in the photo.
Hello?
She popped up on my screen. Hello.
Welcome back. Hi.
I thought you got so scared. You were so scared of Dean doing all those things. Poor Sammy ran for it. His hand looked longer. That's okay. Gave us a chance to talk about it while you were gone.
Oh, okay.
No. Okay, but see, okay, that brings up the point. So what do we think of the fact that Dean confides his deepest, I can't handle Dad's death, to Gordon and not to his own brother?
Well, again, that's because he's the caretaker. He doesn't want to show his weakness.
Yeah, but Gordon.
Well, he doesn't know anything.
True. I mean, that was a little odd.
Probably because he seems somebody else other than his brother and his dad as a hunter.
He has, really? Like, I think it was the two shots he took before that.
I feel more than two shots before that. Yes. Oh, I did love, I have to say Jared instead of Sam. Jared's leaning back in the chair, the whole, I don't want to have anything to do with either of you.
Yeah,
that piece. Yeah. The whole buzzkill bit. He was good. He was really good in just the disgusting looks that he was sharing back and forth. And I liked that. I liked that a lot.
Well, I think that Dean sees in Gordon some of himself so much that he just kind of blurts it out. Like, he feels a connection with him like he didn't see with any of the others, except maybe Bobby, but not the same kind of connection.
No, I agree. And that's why I was surprised when Sam went through that speech of you using him as a substitute for Dad, because I actually didn't see it that way. I saw it more like you're saying, that it was this, you know, a guy he could really relate to, you know,
kind of a buddy thing.
Yeah. And somebody who didn't think it was, you know, weird when, you know, he kills this vampire and it's good, you know, and it's a good thing. Cause he knows, as much as Sam, I think, tries to hide as best he can, he's not, like you said, he's not going to drink to a decapitation. It's just not on his schedule. But but Dean's going to, sure. You know, line him up and give him a couple more. I mean, like, Dean needs a reason to drink anyway, right? Give me a reason. But we did want to talk about, in that section, Gordon says to Dean, Sam's not like us, right? He's different.
Yeah, right.
And Dean has this expression. So go for it. You had one version. I think it's something
else. I thought that it was related to something his dad probably told him before he passed away, or related to the events that happened the previous season with all his abilities and like his trying to figure out maybe he knows something about his brother that he did not know. So in a way, it made me kind of think what people really know about what's happening to them, since people's know about them being hunters and being all.
You know, that's an interesting point that I hadn't thought of, is since these guys, it is their business to know what's going on in this supernatural world, does anybody else know about Sam? Missouri apparently knows. Is that a resounding no?
Well, I would say if his dad knew, why wouldn't anybody else?
Well, except
so, yeah, I would think dad so. There's got to be at least one other person.
Yeah, but somebody had theorized that was the reason that Dad had kept the boys isolated, was for fear of someone finding out. But we're in canon, John didn't know until more recently, right? Isn't that what the canon was, that he didn't really know what was going on until, you know, within the realm of the show?
I thought that Mystery kind of knows, because in one of the episodes, Home, she had mentioned that he has so much power, but he did not know, like, how can he not sense his dad when he was there, in a way.
But that, to me, though, I thought was the biggest clue that Kripke has dropped, because she says, how could he have all the power and not know his father was here?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Easy, because it's not his father, Luke, you know?
Right.
Yeah, okay. Definitely. And, you know,
that's Demon Vader.
And we know hardly, we really don't know anything at all about Mary. I mean, there might have been something going on with her, some deal she made or something. She may have been part of it.
Yeah, that's my canon.
Yeah, that's.
I always felt that she was part of it. Well, and Kripke, so is it fair game not considered a spoiler if Kripke talked about it on TV Guide? Or are we not going there, spoiler-wise?
I think if it's released and it's official word, it's public, knowledge. Then,
yeah.
That's what I feel like. He said that we were going to get, in this season, Mary, not so in so many words, but explaining why she said to Sam, "I'm sorry," at the end of Home. Because that was another thing that fans picked up on and thought, what is she sorry for? And I said, I've always been of the mythology that she had something to do with this. So, interesting play there. But, you know, going back to the thing about Gordon and saying that Sam was different, what I saw in Dean's expression was the first glimmer of, hey, don't talk about my brother that way. You know, that he and Gordon were real chummy. And you know how it's like, it's okay if I pick on my brother, but it's not okay if anybody else does syndrome. Oh. No, I thought that he was really, I thought maybe he was getting his dander up a little bit over the fact that Gordon was sort of dismissing Sam so easily. And it was that first moment of, you know what, don't talk about my brother like that, because, you know, he's good in his own way. He's good. I mean, look at the compliment he gives him later about being able to find his way back to the vampire's lair.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, I think that's why Gordon at least jumped in as fast as he did, defending why he said that.
And I think he really wanted to keep Dean
on his side
too. Yeah, I think because look at from Gordon's point of view, this is probably the first person he's seen that he could really relate to, you know, in meeting Dean. Because there aren't too many other people you could imagine that he ever was able to really sit down and swap these kind of stories with.
It didn't sound to me like he really wanted to do that kind of thing with the way Ellen was talking about him.
Yeah, but, you know, I think it's one thing to say that, and then, you know, you find a kindred spirit, and you kind of, you know, it's like, yeah, you can't help but say, well, hey, this is, you know, somebody else who understands this, the kill, you know? I mean, it's the hunters. You know, it's just the hunters' mentality swapping stories, you know, big fish tales and all, too. Going forward, the other thing that bothered me, when Sam does come back from the vampire's lair, although, okay, can I take just a moment to be a fangirl and squee over Sam getting caught by the vampires and being in danger? If only it had lasted a little longer.
Yeah.
But when he came back and told them that he had been caught by the vampires, I mean, Dean was sort of like,
where do they live?
Oh my God, are you okay? You know, I mean, it was like, huh? Yeah, I was just like, oh, well, like this happens. Well, I was going to say like it happens every day, but actually on the show it does. So.
Yeah, he was like, where do they live? It was the first thing that came out of his mouth.
Yeah, it was just, I thought it was a little bit of a strange reaction, even in character, especially because he is so protective. Even just going to the whole point that he wasn't concerned about Sam being missing when they got back to the hotel. Although he also knows that Sam has his pissy boy attitude and was probably out.
Was the one that questioned where he was at.
Yeah, but he didn't seem too terribly concerned.
Too concerned.
I guess the question was how long, you know, I got the impression they'd been sitting there for quite some time before he realized that he was gone. And the car was still there, which was the other thing that was odd, because if he'd gone anywhere.
Yeah, they did make that comment.
Yeah. Especially after Bender, she thinks
it's strange because
they like, where is he? Oh my God, they got him again.
Paranoid.
Hillbillies.
Yeah. And
all right, come on, Kim. I haven't heard enough from you.
I was gonna say, what about that chipped up car from Gordon with the little slide bit?
Yes.
Jeez. Yeah. These guys are all tricked out, aren't they?
Man. That's when you're talking about the cars earlier. I was thinking, I was like, gee, does every hunter have their little, you know, car that they've fixed up and
put
some
together?
Some prop guy on Supernatural just has way too much fun gathering.
Yeah,
right.
I mean, well, think about it. A cop pulls you over. Do you really want to have an arsenal of weapons in your trunk? I mean.
In your trunk. No.
But officer, I'm only hunting evil, I swear.
Fair.
I have a license to hunt that Wendigo.
Exactly. Oh, and what did Gordon say? There was a chupacabra in the next state over.
Two states over?
Yeah. Fantasy for me, though, where I'm going, you know, go play in your own Supernatural yard, you know, please don't play in mine. And I guess we should give some props to Lenore.
Ah, yes.
Tara, her name just put right. Amber Benson. What do we think of her?
I liked her.
Mm, yeah.
I like the fact that she wasn't your typical supernatural person. You know, she wasn't another vampire just like we'd seen before. They were different.
Yeah, it was a nice twist on the story.
It makes you think, like, how Dean had said at the end of the episode, how many evil had they really killed that were actually evil.
Actually evil. Yes, I thought that too.
And one of the things that impressed me was that when she was talking to Sam, she said something to him about, I know how it is with you hunters. Once you get a scent, you know, you never let go. And, you know, that's that echo of John having said that about, you know, the vampires. Once they get your scent, they never let go. And it was interesting to have the flip side of that, because you don't think about the vampires being in fear of the hunters coming after them. And it was a nice change around, although Sam was definitely not buying it for a while. Like, yeah, right, lady. Of course, the only thing that was missing was Sam should have said, me. Oh, no, wait, you might.
No, that's Dean that would say that. That's why they
didn't. I know. Yeah. Sam was trying to channel his inner Dean, though. You could see it. You know, he was trying to be snarky. But basically, he was going to need a new pair of pants when he got out of there, no problem. No question. Poor baby, manhandled.
How about the new haircut?
I don't like the new haircut any better than I like the old
either.
Haircut. I don't like the forehead thing. My girlfriend said when the forehead shows, it's Jared, because he wears his hair like that. Sam has the bangs. And through a lot of this episode, he didn't have
bangs.
And how annoying is it that it's this, like, Emmy caliber written, directed, written, and acted show? And what do we go on about the car and Sam's hair?
Hair.
Yeah.
The freaking hair.
It has wings.
I did notice they have less layers. They're wearing less layers this season. But I don't know what's up. Jared just all around looks different to me. He looks like he's really bulked up or something. You know what I mean? More so than from last season.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And I don't know if it's just because, again, the clothing they're putting him in, but he just seems bigger standing next to Dean. And, you know, maybe it's intentional, but I think he just muscled up. But, jeez, because he's starting to look like a monster standing there. I mean, indeed, you know, Jensen's not
normal.
A small guy.
No.
You know, but he looks small.
Does appear smaller.
Especially some of those promotional shots that they do. The way, I don't know if it's the placement that they are, just makes Jared look huge.
No, I think he just is.
There's no change in that.
But it is, it's more than just the tall now. That's the thing that got, he always looked a little taller, but I said now he used to always look very gangly, very teenage, you know, got
teenage,
these long legs and don't know what to do with them.
Yeah.
And he doesn't look like that anymore, which works so beautifully for the show, though, too, because boy has Sam grown up, has been forced to grow up in this, you know, course of the season. Poor baby, and doesn't want to go back to school anymore. Finish his education. I think Dee needs to start, like, pulling out college catalogs. And Sam, look at this place. It's kind of nice. Ivy League.
I'll go to Stanford with you.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Join a frat.
That'd be a dangerous campus to be on. Well, you know, and I heard a funny, do you guys ever see Jared's movie, Cry Wolf?
Yeah.
There's a commentary track on it, which is great. Here we get a chance to see the commentary track by the director. It's fantastic. And one of the things he talks about, there's a shot in this church of all of the cast members, and a lot of them are teenage girls, so they're considerably shorter than he is. And the director is looking at the shot in the commentary, and he goes, oh, my gosh. He goes, and look at Jared, and he's so tall. And he goes, but he's so used to the fact that he's so tall that he automatically finds ways to make himself shorter in shots. And he said, watch. He said he will find an excuse to sit down on the pew. They're in a church. He'll find an excuse to sit down so that he is now on level with everybody else in the shots, which is scary that he has to sit down to be on level. But it was so funny, the director, to just, you know, the fact that he's so aware of the fact that he's always practically out of frame standing next to these, especially these girls. That it's like, okay, find a good reason to sit down. So finally he doesn't have to. He can stand up to Jensen.
I wanted to ask you guys, what do you guys thought at the moment that Dean hit Sam? That moment.
Well, you know, it's funny. And somebody said the same thing. I didn't expect it, but I did. I expected it earlier.
Yeah.
I really thought, oh, man, he's going to hit him. And then when he turned to walk away, I thought, huh. And then it still caught me by surprise.
Yeah, I think there'll be a rain check on that one. We'll see that again this season.
Yeah.
I'm so waiting for the... I mean, I hope the writer's room, they've got that pinned up on a wall on a post-it. You know, he owes him one.
Yeah,
some episode, they're going to go, this is the spot. And he's going to hit him, and Dean's going to go, what was that for?
Yeah.
The one he owed me.
But did anybody think it was out of line? I mean, out of line in the sense of where the characters are?
No, not at all.
Because I did see people complaining about that on the boards as well. Or people saying that Sam should have hit him back. No love for hitting back?
I think it worked just the way it was.
Yeah, I agree.
It was sad the way it was. Because of Sam. If Sam had hit him back, it would have been a more adrenaline scene. But for Sam to just sort of take it and just say, you know what? Do it all you like. To make a difference.
Well, you know the whole time Sam is thinking, Dean is so broken up, I don't want to make things worse.
Yet he keeps making things worse.
Like the more he tries, the worse, you know, tries to not do it, the worse it gets.
I think that Sam feels like if he pushes him enough that he'll, that he needs to break him. I think he is trying to break him, thinking that's the only way he's going to get past this, is to finally just lose it. But I don't know. What do you guys think? I mean, when he finally, because he's going to lose it. I mean, we saw little bits of him losing it, but he's going to really lose it.
Yeah.
Is he going to be violent? Or is he going to cry?
Maybe both.
Start with the beating and then start with the crying afterwards.
Yeah, it's going to be something really close to home to take him into that level.
You're going to do it in front of Sam?
Maybe. I just don't think it'll be some random supernatural creature that they're after. I think it's going to have to be something that's really related to their family in some way.
You know, it could be, or, you know, in these cases too, they say a lot that, you know, sometimes there's a trigger, you don't even realize what it is, that it's something small that you go along thinking you're just fine, and then, you know, a leaf falls out of the tree, and that's it. It's just, boom.
That's true.
You know, off you go. And how poignant would that be? I mean, it would actually be, you know, in a sense, quite a beautiful scene to have something really, really, because everything's so huge in their life. Everything's life and death. To have something so small, like, you know, I meant to, you know, I wanted a Coke and a Pepsi came out of the machine, you know, or the soda doesn't come out of the machine at all.
Yeah.
What about classic birth of a new baby or something?
Yeah, something nice like that. Yeah, that's true too. Although, don't wish any babies on anybody in this. Although, I would like to see, and it's slightly cliche, but I really would like to see an episode where they have to deal with a younger child. Like Dead in the Water, we got a little bit of that.
Yeah.
That was so beautiful. But I'm thinking about a younger child and a little girl.
Yes.
Because I could just see him. You know, and it's a little too dreamy and a baby, but can't you just see Dean sort of, you know, for some reason, Dean to me is very paternal, I guess because he said he was sort of the raising them. I could see him like doing the whole, you know, brushing the hair and doing the bows thing. And Sam would be looking at him like, What the heck?
Got to you.
He's like, not letting her going out like this with her hair all messed up. Get out of here. Give me a brush.
Yeah.
It would be cute. It'd be domestic. And Sam would. He would just sit across the room and just marvel at the depths of his mother. How about the hit me back?
Yeah.
Okay, we talked a little bit about that, that he didn't do it. And then the thank you for being a pain in my ass. No, hey, don't go there. This is a clean podcast.
We try. PG-13, that's where we're...
But that was big. That was a lot for Dean, you know, to say thank you for keeping, you know, for keeping me on the straight and narrow. I think that Dean recognizes that without Sam, he would be Gordon. Is that not what we get from
this definitely.
Episode?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I think so.
Yeah, he can see how bad it can get.
And what is the oops? The puppy Gordon's headed to the door jam.
Oh, that was funny. It was so natural. I thought he really did not do it on purpose.
It was natural. I almost wonder if Jensen did it.
Yeah.
It was perfect. And it was just enough relief, you know, for what was such a heavy scenes earlier than that. I mean, all the things he missed. Knife to Sammy's throat, cutting his wrist, his arm, blood.
Yeah. That gave me wasn't
willies.
That a great shot with her kind of morphing into the other vampire?
Yeah, and having that moment. But hey, Gordon was doomed the minute he put a knife to Sammy's throat, man.
Oh yeah.
It's like, don't mess with my brother. And so we think that Gordon is gonna come back after these guys with the vengeance.
No, but I think we'll see him again. I think he'll cross paths at some point.
Yeah.
He's good because, you know, he's antagonistic to them now. He's obviously not too happy with them.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I think he really respects where Dean's coming from, even with this. I think in his mind, it's all just Sam. It's Sam twisting Dean away from the path that he's supposed to be on. Sam's fault.
Yeah. And did...
Everything is.
Did you notice in most episodes, Dean always says Sam this, Sam that, not Sammy. Sammy only comes up once in a while. But in this episode, it was Sammy all over the place.
But yeah. See, Sammy's very condescending. It's very little, you know, it's very, you're the little brother. It's reminding little him, brother. Putting him in his place. And I think that's kind of, again, what this episode was about, was Dean trying to show, you know, so is Oates, I'm above this, and you're the little brother. And
yeah, but almost seems to be a term of affection as well, where it comes out in those sort of critical moments.
Yes, it is. Yeah. But I think, yeah, no, I agree with that too.
Yeah, so it was interesting that there were so many of them, because it's like, well, is it this, or, I don't know, it jumped out at me.
I was kind of like, wow. I was wow when when they were having that discussion when first sitting down in a bar with Gordon, when Gordon told Sam, he called him Sammy, and he said, nobody calls me Sammy but him. He, like, kind of accepting that his brother actually calls him Sammy in a way.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's what people had mentioned, and I hadn't noticed that he has stopped correcting him. On that. And I got to say, that was one thing in fan fiction I was so tired of, was the don't call me Sammy line. It was like, it was cute and it made a point at the beginning, but it was like, okay, done. We got it.
Overused.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. But yeah, but I think it was a very interesting point. You know, it's such a simple sentence and it does say so much about how the relationship has changed between Sam and Dean and how protective Sam has gotten in return.
Yes.
Of Dean, you know, who he always saw as somebody who could take care of himself, now, you know, thinks maybe he needs his brother.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's okay. Yeah. He does need him. What would say, imagine that? I mean, he would be all on his own now. You know, Dean would be all by himself. With Dad gone.
Yeah.
I think that we forget because we didn't see that. I think that sometimes we don't think about how close he and John really were. They were like he and Sam are now. They were together all the time. They slept in the motels. They, you know, ate the lousy food and they drove in the car together for miles and miles and miles. And they were the only people they had, you know, each other to talk to. And that's a lot to lose. And, you know, it's not the same. It's not the same for Sam.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the best lines from the show.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of
it. Oh, no. I know what. I know what it is. No, I know what. It's the it puts the lotion in the basket, which was a Silence of the Lambs. Three Silence of the Lambs.
Silence of the Lambs.
Things in this allusions in this episode, and the way he did it with the voice and everything.
Yeah, that was a good one.
In the basket, and it is right up there with Dean. Can you give me a bucket? Watch, find something. No, I'm going to puke.
Yeah. Puke. Yeah.
Or when he said that, should I leave you guys have a room with the car?
Oh yeah,
that's true. That was a good line. Yeah. You do.
Get a room.
You want to get a room. And what was the thing? Wait, what did Dean say to Sam about, remind me, beat the buzzkill out of you later? When Sam's leaving.
Yeah.
And he throws in the car keys and something like that. Remind me to beat the buzzkill out of you later. Some good stuff. It's good to see the banter back and the line.
I was going
to
say, there just isn't quite enough of it yet for me, but, you know,
well,
I guess they're going to slowly add it back in. Since
I think the tone has to be because of this. And don't look for it. Next episode is, I think, looks even heavier and darker
definitely.
True love.
I mean, did you see the preview?
No, I haven't looked at the head at all.
Oh, my. Oh, Sammy's kneeling in front of somebody's grave in tears.
Yeah.
Who you think, it's his girlfriend or his mom? Or do you guys know?
It's Mary.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mom's grave. Yep. Yeah. I think you're supposed to think that it's Jess's in the preview. Because it looks like that earlier, that dream he had in the first season where he's at Jess's grave.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and the storyline that goes along with it.
Yeah. Well, there's definitely the Jess reference in this.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. The children shouldn't play with dead things. Also, the episode where we will see Jared actually break his wrist.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, I don't think it is it because he's so tall. He has already broken his wrist and his hand over the course of two seasons. You know, that boy is accident prone.
Yeah, they do get thrown around a lot, though.
That's true.
Well, they do, but, you know, that's, you know, to break your wrist and your hand, and they said one of them was an onset accident in two seasons, that's a lot of breaking of bones.
It's a lot of breaking.
And I feel for him with that cast on his arm, and he just looks so uncomfortable with the pictures. And mm-hmm. yeah. But, you know, cool, it's the kind of show they had no trouble working it in.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And we're hoping they make a deal out of it, you know, that Sam's making Dean do all the stuff for him because it's his right hand. Can't open the peanut butter jar. Can't open the soda. Can you get me that?
The Impala's back.
Yeah.
Well, we didn't think the minivan was going to last very long, did we?
They should have put him in like a little Volkswagen or something, a little clown car.
Give him a Beetle. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. You see Jared was tall. He didn't even fit. In a Volkswagen. They had to have an old muscle car because it's the only thing you can fit in.
Yeah.
What about their dad's car? What would ever happen to that?
Well, we talked about that last week.
Yeah, we think it's still in Missouri.
Yeah, because we were thinking it was at the hospital and then remembered, no, it isn't. It's back wherever the demons grabbed him was in the Salvation mm-hmm. was the last time the truck was seen. So, because then they took him from there and they went straight into the Impala and straight to the hospital. So,
right.
The truck is still out there somewhere.
And they're going to find some cool stuff in that truck.
They should have left it. That would have been a really cool contest if they actually parked that truck somewhere in America. And then
we could all go looking for it, right?
Maybe a contest. Have people find it.
Scavenger hunt for a walk-on role.
Yeah. Find John's truck.
Hey, I do it.
Minus Jeffrey Dean Morgan. You know, good to keep him. Now everybody's laughing. So on that happy note, Ellen, we should wrap it up.
All right, that's it. So let's move on to the legends and references section. The first one, of course, is vampires. And I discussed this back in episode 3, covering Dead Man's Blood. So I'm not going to go into that here. Another one was the Chupacabra, which I talked about in episode 19 when I talked about the Benders. So I'm not going to talk about that one here. But I do want to talk about cattle mutilations, also known as bovine excisions. It's the killing and then subsequent mutilation of cattle under unusual or anomalous circumstances. Sheep, horses, and humans have also been allegedly mutilated under similar circumstances. Since mutilations were first reported, it's been attributed variously to predators, natural decomposition, extraterrestrials, secretive governmental or military agencies, and of course, cults. So, the reports of mutilated cattle first surfaced in the U.S. during the early 1960s, at which time it was allegedly largely confined to the states of Pennsylvania and Kansas. Oh, look at that, Kansas. The phenomena remained largely unknown outside cattle-raising communities until 1967, when the Pueblo chieftain in Pueblo, Colorado, published a story about a horse named Lady who was mutilated in mysterious circumstances, which was then picked up by wider press and distributed nationwide. The scale of cattle mutilations is unknown. Some estimate that there are at least 2,000 mutilations each year, although this figure is disputed, and there have been other estimates. Although the nature of mutilation varies from case to case, a typical mutilation might involve all or any of the following physical characteristics: the removal of eyes, udders, and sexual organs, tongue and/or lips, and one ear. The stripping of hide and flesh from the jaw in the area directly beneath the ear, the removal of soft organs from the lower body, the presence of incisions and cuts along the body that appear to have been made by a surgical instrument, unexplained damage to remaining organs but no sign of damage to the surrounding area, a lack of predation signs including teeth marks, tearing at the skin or flesh, or animal footprints on or around the carcass, and the lack of scavenging. In most cases, mutilation wounds appear to be clean and carried out surgically. Mutilated animals are usually, although not always, reported to have been drained of blood and have no signs of blood in the immediate area or around their wounds. In addition to the physical aspects of the mutilation, ranchers commonly claim to have found unusual signs upon or after the discovery of a mutilated animal, including unusual restlessness among surviving animals, refusal of predators and scavengers to feed on the mutilated carcass, strange marks or post holes on the ground around the mutilated animal, and unusual odors, commonly described as being medicinal or surgical in nature. Laboratory reports carried out on some mutilated animals have shown unusually high or low levels of vitamins or minerals in tissue samples, and the presence of chemicals not normally found in animals. However, not all mutilated animals display these anomalies, and those that do have slightly different anomalies from one another. On account of the time between death and necropsy, and a lack of background information on specific cattle, investigators have often found it impossible to determine if these variations are connected to the animal's deaths or not. Wow, that's a happy topic. Let's move on to songs, shall we? The two songs in this episode were, of course, Back in Black by AC/DC. Oh, was it wonderful to hear it again. And one of my favorite songs, Wheel in the Sky by Journey. The song of the night is Seeker by The Twitch. Enjoy.
It's all together, it's all we need, it's what you seek. It's all together, it's all we need. That it's me. Look inside the dream. It's your reality that speaks to you and me. The love that you desire, it's all you can feel, it's all you can see. It's all your senses that are real to you and me.
Inside a picture frame, what can it be? Is it you and me?
Yeah, exploitation, frustration, masturbation, isolation, demonstration, elimination, one in a same. Exploitation, frustration, damnation, elimination, frustration, damnation, one and the same. Exploitation, frustration, elimination, isolation, demonstration, frustration, one and the same. Yeah, I'm a seeker.
All one and the same.
Well, that's it for this episode. Our next podcast will cover episode 204, Children Shouldn't Play with Dead Things. Have a great week. Thank you for listening to the Supernatural Podcast. You can visit my website at supernaturalpodcast.blogspot.com or send me an email at supernaturalpodcast@gmail.com. Please note that the opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and not of the producers of Supernatural or the CW. Audio clips played on this podcast are property of the CW and no infringement is intended. Some of the music heard here is from the Podshow PodSafe Music Network. Check it out at music.podshow.com.